Why is it the same repetitive mistakes continue to rob salespeople of more commission checks, regardless of industry, size of company, or region of the globe? These same inhibitors are holding us back from reaching our full potential. Amongst many industry awards, Ian Selby achieved the accolade of top salesperson in the world at Apple. And in this podcast, he will discuss the issues that sales professionals encounter from his own experiences, confessing to the problems he has endured and how he overcame them, giving the benefit of his wisdom to everyone listening who work in the world of sales. To help you, he will reveal strategies to overcome the issues hurting salespeople and helping you reach new levels of sales success. Confessions of a Sales Pro. Less sins, more wins. With your host, Ian Selby.
Welcome to Confessions of a Sales Pro. My very special this week is a very great friend, Steve Haru, CEO and founder of the Sales Collective in Dallas, Texas. Steve's sales DNA testing process is transforming the ways companies train, teach, and lead their sales organizations. In his 25 years in the industry of professional selling, Steve has trained thousands of salespeople to reach their targets, led multiple high-performance sales teams. He's risen to the top of his field in numerous industries and leaves his audiences and clients changed for the better. Steve's organizations work with companies whose leaders have enough self-awareness, emotional intelligence, and vulnerability to acknowledge they don't know everything. His ideal clients are mid-market companies who would like to revamp, revitalize, or reimagine their entire sales operation from top to bottom. Whether it's evaluating your current sales team, optimizing your onboarding and sales process, or helping you hire amazing sales talent that will stick, the Sales Collective can help you reach the level of success you know you deserve. Steve, welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thanks so much, Ian, for having me. As you know, we were just speaking out and about, traveling, speaking, helping. So still can't believe I get to do what I do every day. So pinch myself every morning.
Isn't it great, Steve, when you find the lane you're in and you know you're in the right place? And I have that in common with you, my friend. That's so good. I know you're coming to me live from Boston.
Yes, sir.
And so thanks. I know you're traveling, and I'm going to New York later tomorrow, and then I'll be in Dallas in a couple of weeks. So you and I have a lot in common that way.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for taking the time, Steve, because I know you're busy.
Problem.
And I know you're traveling, and on behalf of our listeners, thanks for taking the time out to be with us today. Steve,
absolutely.
I'm always fascinated by the entrepreneurial backstory. You know, like, what got you started? Why did you start your business? And how did you get started in sales in general? I'd love to hear your story on that.
Sure. It's funny. I just told this to a group out here in Boston where I'm originally from, and, you know, they were floored at where I am today compared to where I started. So my quick background, you know, I didn't say a word from probably first grade through high school. You know, deaf, mute, no dates, no dances, no prom, no nothing. Time to give book reports, you know, I'd go in the bathroom and throw up. So I ended up going to college, a very expensive business school here in the Boston area. And I got my first semester of books, and five books cost me $1,600. So
wow.
I was like, oh my God, I'm going to bankrupt my parents. You know, I better get a job. And I answered an ad, and they told me it was sales. And I said to the guy, I'm like, so do I have to talk to anybody? Or and they're like, yes, you have to talk to people. I said, well, don't you have a desk job or something? They're like, no. So what would I be selling? And they go, we'll tell you when you get down here. So I went down, I got hired because they hire anybody, you know, that's breathing. And it ended up being Cutco Knives. And so some of your audience may know what Cutco Knives are. So many folks get started in that business. And I didn't know my you-know-what from my elbow. So I started selling knives. And I did something completely novel in sales, which was tell people the truth. So I didn't do their demo or lollygag around. I just told people they were really expensive, but really good. That turned into 4 years later, my senior year, being number one in the country, selling Cutco knives in the U.S. And so I felt like maybe I have, you know, something I'm marginally good at. And so that was my start, in sales. And, you know, that led to leading multiple successful sales teams. And from there, went to the insurance company with the duck. So again, some of y'all in the States would know what Aflac is. And yes. Spent 13 years there. And about halfway through my career was the number one agent in Aflac. So 60,000 people, I was the top guy. And so coming from somebody that, you know, didn't speak, it just lets folks know, hey, anybody can be successful in sales. You have to learn it. You know, it's like a language. But what really helped me was, you know, honesty, integrity, humility. And those are, you know, three of our core values today. So that's how I started.
That's a great backstory, Steve. I love what you were talking about, selling knives. I know my first sales job was selling typewriters. Some of our audience might remember what they were.
DC, right? Typewriters, vacuums. Oh, man. So many
knives started. Yeah, yep. Interesting, right? Where we all got our roots, where we all got started. Yes, and then you went on to be number one in the country, and you rocked Aflac. And I love what you said about honesty and integrity, because with that, anyone can do anything. And whether you're an extrovert, an introvert, it doesn't matter. If you, as you say, learn the language of sales, have the right DNA for it, and it's learnable. It's not, you're not born a great salesperson. You're developed into one. Then you can be a rock star as well, just like you, Steve. That's a great story. I really, really love it.
Yes, sir.
There's a variety of options for companies when it comes to sales training. Right, and I've been in that industry myself for nearly 30 years. You have quite a different take on traditional sales training, Steve. And you have an assessment called sales DNA. And now that just sparks my curiosity. I'm sure same with our listeners. Can you share more about what you mean by sales DNA and your assessment itself?
Sure thing. It's funny you just said DNA unknowingly right a minute ago. So What I saw in the sales training world was akin to a bunch of doctors giving their patients the same two aspirin. Like, there's no magic sales training, you know, for all industries, all people. For one, most companies, most salespeople, they don't even have a sales process. Which again is akin to a football team not having a playbook. How could you run a practice with no plays? So how can you train a salesperson with no sales process? The training is twofold. It's about executing the sales process, for one, but number two, it's what lives in people's brains, minds, thoughts that means the most. And so if we think about sales DNA, which is our assessment, it's our tool. It's not mine. I don't own it. We just use it. But we've tested 2.3 million people now globally in the last 33 years, 36,000 companies. But what we're revealing are things that people have no idea are affecting their ability to sell. So in our short time, some Cliff Notes, there's a couple things we measure. One of them is called the need to be liked. And believe it or not, about 8 out of 9 salespeople need to be liked. Now, if you need to be liked as a salesperson, this is a horrendous trait, because you'll end up bending over backwards, signing bad deals, taking on customers that aren't your ideal customers, discounting to make sales because you want to make everybody happy. So what we found is that the top 10%, top 14% of women and men in sales would rather be respected than liked. It's the bottom performers that would rather be liked than respected. But there's a very unique distinction where all the best men and women in the world of sales, they're likable. They just don't care if you like them.
Yes.
So that's just one, but we measure probably 180 different aspects of selling and thought-provoking ideas that affect people and their ability to sell. uncomfortable with money is one. Can they recover from rejection is another. Do they have a supportive buy cycle, which means do the way they buy affect the way they sell? So if you take forever to make decisions, for example, as a salesperson, guess what you allow your prospects to do? If you're an impulsive buyer, guess what you expect your prospects to do? So all of that
like stuff, a reflection. Yes. Wow.
And they're not you and you're not them. And so all of those things, if you don't know you're doing it, how would you ever figure it out? So that's why we do DNA on every single person we work with. There is no other way we could ever think we could coach, train, and teach a salesperson or a sales team without that info. And so that's kind of what I mean by doctors giving patients 2 aspirin. They don't know what's wrong. They don't know their hindrances, their challenges, their symptoms. They just assume, hey, let me teach you, you know, closing or let's build rapport or, you know, all the generic stuff.
Right.
It doesn't work.
Right. I love your analogy, the medical. I mean, without a diagnosis, you can't do a prescription. You don't know what their needs are. You don't know the starting point. And all you did is go to your doctor once a year for your checkup and say, hey, take these purple pills. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Now, where's the point? I'm starting to doubt the integrity of that. So
correct.
I hear you loud. I loved your analogy with the football playbook. If there's no playbook, how do we know?
So true.
Let alone play a game. How do we know to even practice? And it's the same with in sales as having a sales process. And then you get good and trained on how to be effective at executing on that process.
Correct.
2.3 million people tested. I mean,
yep.
I got to say, that's proven. That is completely proven. And I love
they've done a great job
with
that.
Yes, absolutely. And I love how you've tailored it to the sales world, Steve. The need to be liked versus respected. That is a big one. And there's psychology in that, right? There's deeply rooted psychology that needs to be considered and worked with as you develop going forward. The top performers, clearly, being respected is way more important than being liked.
Correct.
Issues with money, rejection, the decision-making reflection model, where if you buy quick, you want your customers to. If you take forever and fill in a spreadsheet, you're going to let them do that as well.
Correct.
Right? So,
and they don't need to do that. They don't buy like that. You do.
That's right. Exactly. They're different.
But that stuff, you know, it's really never taught. And unfortunately, where we work so deeply with a lot of our sales managers, to go back to the analogy, they're telling their salespeople, hey, go score touchdowns. And the salespeople go, well, we don't have any plays. And the sales manager goes, well, I don't care. Go score them anyway.
Yeah, just go run at the field.
Just get open. You can't do that. But that's what 8 out of 9 companies do right now as we speak. And so you have that sales manager level, which is the least trained in an organization. And so that's why we have sales manager DNA, which we look at completely different things than we do on sales DNA.
I so agree. Selling and sales management don't really have a lot in common. Parenting and sales management have more in common, right? So making a sales manager an effective coach, there's a whole lot of development that needs to happen there. And the worst thing a sales organization can do is take their best salesperson, promote them to sales manager, and say, work your magic. Well, now you've lost their impact out of the field, and you haven't tooled them properly to become a leader. So that
they do it all the time.
Again, we both run into it, right?
Well, you've seen it a million times. I was thinking about this today, this morning, after one of my talks. And during the talk, I was trying to think of an analogy, and I said, they don't make flight attendants the pilot.
Right.
In 6 weeks. And the idea was, well, you work on a plane, you know, you've been here for 5 years. Like, what? In what way does that qualify somebody to be a pilot?
Exactly.
But companies keep doing this over and over again. And it doesn't
work.
They
wonder why they're not successful.
It will never work. Correct.
Exactly. The need in the market for what you got, Steve, is massive. It truly is. And your company provides a lot more than sales training and coaching, right? That's just parts of it.
Yes, sir.
Would you mind sharing some of the other deliverables you provide to help companies and the people in them, you know, increase their sales results? Would love to hear
sure
more
thing.
About that.
Yeah, it's funny. I had another talk this morning with this gentleman here in the Boston area, and he said, well, if you had a gun held to your head, you know, what would you make your clients and customers do first? I said, I would make them do a sales process, right? The sales process has to be the foundation of everything. And so if companies don't have one, which again, 8 out of 9 do not, what are you training your existing people on for one? But number two, if you even think you're going to hire somebody new, another salesperson or replacing one that you have, and then bring them into a system that doesn't exist and then expect them to do well, it's flawed thinking. And so we help companies build sales processes from the ground up. So literally from an MQL or an SQL or whatever the very first lead comes in or first phone call goes out, all the way to nurturing this client or customer for the next 10 years and every step in between. There's probably 300 steps, but they've all got to be documented. If they're not documented, how are you teaching this to your people, for one? And two, if you do hire somebody new, what are you telling them when they come to work with you? Hey, you figure it out.
Right.
Right? It's again, trying to think of some analogies for folks in real life. It's akin to you walking into a restaurant, and you've got two restaurants. One has a menu where you can pick from whatever, 40 things. And another restaurant doesn't have a menu, and they just ask every single customer that comes in, hey, what do you want today? We'll make it. Could you imagine the chaos that would happen in that kitchen?
Oh,
but that's what's happening in sales organizations every day. You've got 10 salespeople doing 10 different sales processes. None of them are right. None of them are in accordance with what you expect them to do. There's no consistency. There's no ideal customer profile each of them are following or targeting. They can't do their value prop to save their own life. And you're yelling at them because they're not meeting the quotas you foisted on them. It just doesn't make any sense.
Oh,
so that sales process should come first before anything.
It has
yes.
to. I know when I do assessments, Steve, you and I chatted about this last week, but when I go in and I interview 10 sales, you know, 10 salespeople, you would think I would find 10 sales processes. But the truth of that matter is I don't, because each salesperson typically, if they're not trained, have a multitude of processes themselves. So now you got spaghetti.
How do you
throw someone into the bowl of spaghetti and say, figure it out? It just doesn't work. And that
they
lack
do
a documented sales process
creates
a number of issues. And you touched on a few of them for sure. Inconsistent value proposition messaging to the customer. We're all playing.
Well, they don't even know what to say in a follow-up email, right? So you got 10 reps with 10 different emails with 10 different messages. So if it's not documented and there is no database or Google Drive or anything, right, where your team can go and pull, what do I send on a third follow-up email? What language should accompany a proposal review? If that stuff is not in a file somewhere easily accessible, how can your salespeople succeed? And so without that baseline, we really can't do right sales training, coaching, and development, right, which is another deliverable we have. We really can't help you hire, right, because we use DNA to help companies hire, right, top-performing salespeople and sales leaders. And what's interesting, when we use the DNA test for hiring, it's custom-built by the client. So your DNA test for your sales hire will be completely different than every other client we have because you know what you need in terms of skill sets, mindset, you know, drive, determination, all those things. But it's 92% predictive, and we have 33 years of data to prove it. So we know 9 out of 10 times that person is the right person for you.
That's
the success rate of every other.
Yeah.
Without is 23%. So
you know,
employers guessing whether or not the salesperson is going to be great because of their DISC profile or because they have a good personality or they're good looking or whatever.
Had that's a good one interview, out of four. Right?
Yeah.
The best sales
look at their resume.
Those are kind of the things. It's a nightmare, Steve. I totally agree. The lack of a sales process, a documented, as you say, sales process, it creates a coaching nightmare if you don't have it. It's a forecasting freak show when you're trying to get accurate forecasting in the pipeline.
Yeah, forget that. That's out the window.
There's not a chance, right? So it's got to be standard. And you're right. Have a repository. Have a standard file where all of the tools and reinforcement of the process are there. And that's correct. And things are never done, one and done, right? There's evolution that continues to happen. And when you make improvements, it all goes in there. You can retrain them and it's standard again, right? So
it's small improvements. I mean, 90% of it's not going to change, but you've got variables with the economy, with pricing, with supply chain, with talent, you know, management, all those things. So you can change it, you know, slightly here and there, and you should to adjust it for the marketplace you're in. But even if a company did have a sales process, and let's say it's 4 years old, I mean, it might as well be 40 years old. Because if you're doing things you did before the pandemic, you can't do that in today's marketplace. So if you do have it updated, it's so important.
The two biggest things I find are the needs of the customers are constantly changing because the pandemic affected them as well, right? Not just us, not just our sales organization, but them as well. And the competition is ever changing. So those are like the cork on the water. It's bobbing and moving and changing. It's dynamic. So we've got to stay afloat. We've got to stay on top of it. And maybe 90% cut and paste, but that 10% could be the difference between winning and not winning. Or taking forever to win, right? So
all the time.
It's fascinating. I love that you've got contrarian views on lots of things, Steve. I really do.
Yes, sir.
I think that's so refreshing today. It truly is. And it is a pleasure speaking with you. Would you be open to sharing what you think about KPIs? You know, the key performance indicators and their importance on a business. What's your take on KPIs?
They're dumb. there's no other way. I mean, they're stupid. And what I mean by that is I think that the way people define KPIs for the most part is not intelligent because they're using the lagging indicators for their KPIs. And you don't learn anything from lagging indicators. And the biggest lagging indicator in a business is sales, revenue. You can't measure revenue to drive revenue. Doesn't make any sense. You have to measure the leading indicators. What's driving the revenue? And we know activity drives the revenue, technically proper activity, right, drives the revenue. So we like to say, you know, we call them DPIs, right, which are daily performance indicators. But what are the DPIs that we measure? These are things like number of dials, not appointments. And there's a reason, because we can't control who picks up the phone. If you figure out how to do that, let me know.
Right.
But last time I
sent voicemail, right? And it's a known fact.
we can't control who picks up. All we can control as salespeople is our activity. That is what we should be rewarded upon. So if I know my guys and gals are making 50 dials, I don't care how many appointments they make, just do the dials. Now, the deeper factor we have to look at is, are they talking to decision makers and not making appointments? If I don't know that info, I can't just tell them to randomly dial incessantly for the next century. So we have to look into, it's not just the dials, but if we're talking to 10 people and all 10 tell us to pound sand, now I know it's a training issue. So DPIs are really important to keep track of what your people are doing every day, but you've got to have DPIs that are in your salesperson's control. Did I write my two thank you notes? Did I ask for referrals? Did I post on LinkedIn? Every single salesperson and company has different DPIs. And so we create this little thing we call the Daily 100, which we kind of gamified it. So now all our clients and their salespeople, they just have fun at work, right? What a surprise.
Yes.
So all they do is get their 100 points, which it's just a combination of different weighted values for each DPI. So in most clients, right, a dial is 1 point, where a demo, right, or a decision maker meeting, maybe that's 20 points.
Right.
They did their studying for today. We teach 15 minutes a day of training, right? That's 5 points. So as long as they did their studying and did their work and their online curriculum, like some of the stuff we teach, they're done. They did their 15 minutes. Did they read? So you get to craft, right, these DPIs inside your own company. We'll help you build them. But when you gamify it and people get their 100 points today, they feel good when they go home to their families. They come into work feeling good. If you don't have that and you have these quotas and things, they leave depressed, anxious, nervous, right, fearful. That's not good for a salesperson, and it sure as heck is not good for your customers. So we know if they get their 100 points every day and do the activities, we know factually they will sell more stuff. It happens all the time in every client we've ever put it into. So that's my thought on KPIs.
I love DPIs. I love how you tipped it upside down. And just to comment on your answer there, Steve, I've heard people say, well, we manage our results around here. Well, guess what? No one can do that.
No.
You cannot manage results.
It's impossible.
All we can do on the sales side of that argument is manage the activity that drives the results, right? And
yes.
I like how, you know, you're looking at dials. I mean, there needs to be a balance, and you touched on it, between quantity and quality, right?
Yes.
So have we got our quantity? Are we running fast enough? And then the quality would be, are we running in the right direction, right? So we start to get those two things in concert. And gamification is the way to do it. Salespeople, you think salespeople are a little bit competitive? Are you kidding me? We all are. So a gamification is a new game I can win every day. Now know what every salesperson in the world wants to play that game. So that's fantastic. I really love the DPIs. That's a brilliant new term. So, Steve, listen, you have scratched the curiosity of all of our listeners today. I'm absolutely certain, including myself. How can our listeners reach out to get a hold of you if they want to learn more about the sales DNA assessment or the DPI program? How can they reach out to say hello?
So easy way, LinkedIn. We're always on LinkedIn. Steve Herroux, again, H-E-R-O-U-X. Feel free to connect on there. Website's easy too, thesalescollective.com. You know, they're a little, whatever, just type your name in for info or something. We'll be happy to share with you that. One of the things too, and I don't know if this is appropriate or not, or maybe be happy to do it, but we'd love to have people see what sales DNA is all about. So a lot of times, you know, we'll offer, you know, one test for free, right? One per client or per company so they could see what it's like in their own organization with one of their people. And if they'd be willing to let us review the DNA test with them about their salesperson or sales manager and let us show them what we found, we'll comp it. We'll give it for free. So, you know, normally these things are $600, but we'll do one per company as long as they let us review it, right, with their leader or leadership team. And all the time they're like, wow, you nailed it, or this is spot on about Jenny, or this is what we were worried about with Mark. And so we'd be happy to do that. So feel free, ladies and gents, to connect with us online or on LinkedIn, and, you know, we'd be happy to help.
Steve, that's a very, very generous offer. Listeners, I would take Steve up on that offer. I certainly would. There's so much value in what we've just reviewed with the sales DNA assessment. Please take him up on it and reach out. Steve, once again, on behalf of the listeners, thank you so much for your time and your wonderful experience and wisdom. Greatly appreciated today, sir.
No problem, Ian. Thanks so much, sir. Anything for a fellow salesman who's been in the game, you know, a lot longer than me. You've forgotten more than I need to learn, but thanks everybody for listening, and really appreciate you taking the time to have me on, Ian. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve, and thank you all for listening to Confessions of a Sales Pro.
If you have found this episode informative and helpful, we would be honored and appreciative if you would share this podcast with other great salespeople like yourself. And we look forward to you joining us for all new episodes weekly, every Thursday. Please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. If you'd like us to help you grow your sales commissions, visit us at salesmentoryou.com. Confessions of a Sales Pro. Lessons, more wins. With Ian Selby.